The dawn did not break, it leaked. Gray light seeped over the eastern ridge, pale and thin, failing to push back the heavy mist that clung to the pilgrim's road like wet wool. Ilse was awake before the light, her eyes open to the ceiling beams where the shadows shifted slow and imperceptible. She lay still, listening. The hollow was wrong. Usually, the hum was the first thing she noticed in the morning, a low, resonant thrum rising from the stones, vibrating up through the floorboards and into the soles of her feet. It was the sound of the road holding itself together. That day, there was nothing. Only the wind moving through the bramble, whistling a thin, hollow note. She sat up, the blanket fell away, her feet found the cold floor. Jaren was gone. The corner where he had slept was empty, the straw mattress undisturbed, the few belongings he'd brought with him his worn satchel, the wooden staff leaning against the wall all missing. Ilse walked to the window. The glass was frosted with ice crystals. She wiped a circle clear with her sleeve. The yard was empty, the gate hung open. Then she heard it, the scrape of iron on stone. It came from the north, beyond the fence line, where the road disappeared into the mist. A harsh, grating sound, mechanical and violent, tearing through the silence. Ilse pulled on her boots, ignoring the chill that bit at her ankles, and grabbed her shawl from the hook by the door. She did not bother with the latch. She pushed the door open and stepped out into the damp air. The cold hit her like a physical blow, stealing the breath from her lungs. She pulled the shawl tighter and started walking north, her boots crunching on the frost-hardened grass. She found them at the second waystone. Three men. They wore the livery of the barons' keep dark tunics of rough-spun wool, leather aprons stained with grease and clay. They moved with the efficient brutality of laborers who had done this work 100 times before. Two of them held ropes tied around the waist of the standing stone. The third stood back, holding a clipboard of waxed paper, ticking marks with a charcoal stick. And in the center, Torvin. He was kneeling in the dirt, his hands covered in a gray paste that smelled of vinegar and crushed lime. He worked the substance into the cracks at the base of the stone with a small iron trowel. His black hair was tied back in a severe knot, his face sharp and unlined, his eyes blue and cold as the winter sky above. He did not look up when Ilse approached. He did not acknowledge her existence. "Torvin," she said. Her voice sounded small in the vast quiet of the hollow. He paused. He set the trowel down on a rag beside him and stood up. He was taller than she remembered, broad-shouldered, filling the space with an oppressive stillness. He wiped his hands on his apron, leaving streaks of gray. "Mrs. Vane," he said. His voice was dry, bureaucratic, devoid of warmth. "You're up early." "It's dawn," she said. "What are you doing?" Torvin glanced at the stone behind him. It was the second marker on the Pilgrim's Road, carved with runes that had faded to ghostly whispers over centuries. It was 3 feet wide at the base, tapering to a rough point at the top. It had stood there since before Ilse was born, since before her father, since before her grandfather. "The Baron requires the foundations for the new West Wing," Torvin said. He spoke as if explaining the weather to a child. "These stones are structurally unsound. They're cracking. The frost gets in, expands, and splits the core. We're removing them to prevent collapse onto the road." Ilse looked at the stone. It was solid, intact. She had touched it yesterday. It was cold, solid, patient. There were no cracks, there was no frost damage. "There are no cracks," she said. Torvin sighed. It was a short, irritated sound. He picked up his trowel again and pointed it at the base of the stone. "Look closer, Mrs. Vane. The decay is internal. If we leave it, it could fall on a traveler. The Baron cannot be liable for accidents on his property." "It's not his property," Ilse said. "It's on my land. It's been on my land for 40 years. Torvin turned to her fully now. His expression was mild, almost polite, but his eyes were hard. "The deed you received, did you read the fine print? Section 14, Clause B, any structures deemed hazardous to the passage of the Royal Road may be removed by the Baron's agents at the owner's expense." "I didn't pay for the removal," Ilse said. "I didn't agree to anything." "You agreed by accepting the deed," Torvin said. "Absence is consent. Neglect is consent. You've let this road go to ruin for 7 years, Mrs. Vane. The Baron is merely correcting the record." He nodded to the men with the ropes. "Pull." The men tightened the hemp ropes. They dug their heels into the mud. They pulled. The stone did not move. Ilse felt the vibration in the ground. It was faint, a tremor running through the earth, but she felt it in her teeth. The hum. It was still there, buried under the cold, trying to rise. "Stop," she said. Torvin didn't look at her. Again. The men pulled harder. The ropes creaked. The stone shifted just an inch, just a fraction, but it shifted. A crack appeared at the base, a hairline fracture splitting the gray rock. Dust puffed out from the seam. Ilse stepped forward. She put her hand on the stone. It was warm. Not hot, not burning, but warm. A steady, rhythmic heat like the flank of a sleeping horse. It pulsed against her palm, a slow, desperate heartbeat. She could feel it pushing back against the ropes, against the iron, against the men. It was fighting. "Don't," she whispered. Torvin looked at her then, really looked at her. His gaze dropped to her hand on the stone, then back to her face. He saw the color draining from her cheeks. He saw the fear in her eyes. He smiled. It was not a nice smile. "You feel it, don't you?" he said softly. "The instability, the weakness. It's falling apart, Mrs. Vane, just like your uncle's little games, just like this road." "My uncle kept this road alive," Ilse said. Her voice was shaking. "Your uncle kept a graveyard," Torvin said. He turned back to his clipboard and made another mark with the charcoal. "Progress requires sacrifice. The Baron's Hall will house the regional court. It will bring trade. It will bring order. These stones are obstacles. They are dead weight." "They're not dead," Ilse said. "They're waiting." Torvin laughed. It was a sharp barking sound. Waiting for what? For the next fool to wander off into the dark and never come back. For the next traveler to vanish into the mist. "There's nothing out there, Mrs. Vane, just empty land and bad weather. The songs are lies. The runes are superstition. It's time to clear the way." He signaled the men again. "Break it." One of the men pulled a hammer from his belt. He raised it high. Ilse moved. She threw herself between the man and the stone. She didn't think. She just moved, her body slamming into the worker's side, knocking him off balance. The hammer flew from his grip, clattering into the mud. The other two men spun around, surprised. Torvin didn't move. He just watched, his arms crossed, his expression unreadable. "Get off my land," Ilse said. She was breathing hard, her heart hammering against her ribs. She stood in front of the stone, her back to it, her arms spread wide. "Get your men off my land. Now." The worker who had dropped the hammer rubbed his shoulder. He looked at Torvin for instruction. Torvin raised an eyebrow. "Mrs. Vane, you're obstructing a lawful operation. If you don't step aside, I'll have you arrested for interference. The Baron's guards are already on their way." "Let them come," Ilse said. She didn't believe them. The Baron's guards were miles away, in the keep, drinking their morning ale. Torvin was bluffing. He needed her to step aside because he needed the stone removed before the sun was fully up, before the light revealed what was happening to the rock. Because the stone was changing. She stood behind it, the hum grew louder. It wasn't just a sound anymore. It was a pressure, a weight in the air, pressing against her skin. The air around the waystone shimmered, distorting like heat haze in summer. The gray light of dawn seemed to bend toward the stone, drawn into its mass. Torvin saw it too. His smile faltered. He took a step back. "What is that?" he asked. His voice was less confident now. "That's the road," Ilse said. She didn't turn around. She could feel the stone pressing against her back, holding her up, anchoring her. "And you're not taking it." She closed her eyes. She reached out with her mind, past the fear, past the anger, down into the cold, solid patience of the rock. She remembered her father's hands on the stone, smoothing the moss. She remembered her uncle's voice, reading from the ledger, warning her. "They don't understand," he had said. "They think it's just stone. It's not, it's a promise." "I'm here," she thought. "I'm keeping the promise." The ground shook. It wasn't a tremble this time. It was a jolt, violent and sudden, throwing the three men off their feet. The ropes snapped, whipping through the air like snakes. The hammer flew out of the mud and struck the fence post with a loud crack. Torvin hit the ground hard, scraping his knee. He scrambled to his feet, his face pale, his eyes wide. "Stop it," he shouted. "Stop it now." Ilse opened her eyes. The stone was glowing. Faintly, at first a soft, blue-white light emanating from the cracks, from the runes, from the very core of the rock. It illuminated the mist, pushing it back, creating a sphere of clarity around them. The air smelled of ozone and old rain. The men were scrambling backward, tripping over each other, dropping their tools. They were afraid. Good, let them be afraid. Torvin stood his ground, but he was trembling. He looked at the stone, then at Ilse, then at the sky. The dawn was breaking properly now, the sun cresting the ridge, casting long shadows across the field. But the light from the stone was brighter, stronger. "This isn't over," Torvin said. His voice was a whisper. "The Baron won't stop. He'll send more men, he'll bring engineers, he'll bring fire." Ilse stepped away from the stone. The glow dimmed, fading back into the gray rock, the hum settling back into its low, constant thrum. But the air remained charged, electric, alive. "I know," she said, "but today you don't get it." Torvin stared at her for a long moment. Then he turned and marched back toward the road, his men stumbling after him, their livery torn, their dignity shattered. He didn't look back. Ilse stood alone in the yard. The stone stood behind her, cold and solid and patient once more. But she could feel the crack at its base, the hairline fracture Torvin's men had made. It was small, invisible to anyone but her. But it was there. She placed her hand on the stone again. The warmth was gone. Only the cold remained. She walked back to the cottage. The door was still open. The fire was still burning. Jaren's staff leaned against the wall where she had left it. She closed the door. She drew the bolt. Outside, the pilgrim's road stretched northward, cracked and overgrown, disappearing into the hollow. The stones hummed, low, constant, fraying at the edges. But there,